true outcomes they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Want to win that score sheet? You're gonna want to stay with Three True Outcomes.
Howdy. Welcome to the Three True Outcomes Score Sheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. I'm your host, Ian Lefkowitz, and we have so many guests today, I do not even have an end or obscure pop culture references to make. So, joining me, for, as always, from Plymouth, Michigan, it's Ben Murphy. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Ian?
Doing well. And joining us, as always, from our nation's capital, it's, who is it? sorry, new phone, who dis?
Good, I was worried when you said you didn't have any pop culture references.
Yeah, no problem. I work fast. So, Jared, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Okay, and we also have special guests. We for our last episode of the regular season, we are getting actual smart people to come and join us. You may recognize them from other podcasts such as this one a few months ago. joining us from a place I should have checked in advance, Nate Stevens. Nate, how are you doing?
Good. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back.
It's a pleasure. And joining us from the left coast, our voluble league mate partner, John Main. John, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Good to be on.
Okay. Great, everyone's here. This is a very exciting podcast. It's our last one of the season. We have special guests. We have mirth, merriment, and we're going to actually do a live mock draft, which is, from what I understand, the height of entertainment. The VMAs were like, it was either going to be the 15-minute Beyonce segment or a mock draft. And I don't know that they chose correctly. But we're going to make our own decisions here. So before we get to that, as always, you can email us with any questions that you might have. We won't be on to answer them. But you can email us. That's the thing.
We'll email back.
Yeah, we'll email back. Scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions in the off season, if you feel lonely, we'll be happy to respond eventually. And we hope to be back a little later in the winter for the mock draft, as always. We have some good questions to wrap us up. With that, I'm going to toss it over to our mailbag captain. How's it going?
Doing great. We have three questions this week. The first one comes from loyal listener Grant, who thanks us for the advice on picking up Zach Britton. Grant is now going to win everything entirely because of Zach Britton, our advice, so good job, us. Well done, guys. Grant says he's got an Aaron Sanchez-shaped hole in his rotation and a combination of Rich Hill, Trevor Bauer, and Ian Kennedy in the 4-5 swingman roles. In asking around the league, he's got a package on the table, potentially, of Hamels, Rajai Davis, and maybe Rafael Devers for Moncada, Kepler, a 14, and Jason Buddy Groom. His rotation includes Scherzer, Kluber, and Jose Quintana. So Camels would be the fourth, or in addition to those three. So is the upgrade worth the package of future value?
John, I am going to toss it to you first on this, because I think we all have the same opinion, and you have the quickest way of expressing it.
Well, basically you're saying I have a flying car. I want to know whether I should stick my arm in the garbage disposal and turn it on. Do not do this! You have plenty of pitching. Scherzer, Kluber, Quintana, and Rich Hill needs one start, and you will have some Rich Hill. You are giving up for Cole Hamels, who's perfectly fine, for Moncada? I don't know if you do that. With Kepler and a 14 and more? No! No! Don't do this! It's a bad idea! That's all. That's my only general opinion on that.
Okay, but on the other hand, do we have any counter opinions? Crickets. Oh, yeah, don't do it.
I think the more interesting discussion might be, is Cole Hamels the third most valuable property in that deal? because I think you can make a legitimate argument that Max Kepler is more valuable.
I think you can too. Max Kepler might be a very good player, and starting pitchers are frightening.
Yep. Plus, you get that extra German market. You get to tap new score sheet audiences with it's really exciting in a lot of ways.
Let's say he was really interested in picking up Hamels and was willing to move draft picks to do so instead. Do you guys have a sense for, is this a standard hard 13 protect league?
Yeah, I was assuming.
Okay, let's assume that it is for the sake of the question. Do you guys have a sense for what you think fair return would be if you wanted to trade for Hamels using only draft picks?
It'd have to be multiple picks, I think. It'd be a 14-plus pretty easily. Hamels is good, so.
Is it possible to come up with a package of picks that's fair?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
That you would do it and then just destabilize the depth of your team next year, because it would have to be all the picks.
I feel obligated to argue the opposite, given my history of trading nearly my entire draft for two players. I mean, I think you can. To be honest, I think Cole Hamels is a little overrated right now. You know, he's, 32 now? I think he's declined a little bit. He's had that mask this year by some good luck. His command's a little wobbly. His velocity's a little down. So I don't think he's a great target just for future years. Certainly he would help this year, but going back to Grant's team, his rotation's so strong, it's not worth it. So between the strength he already has and the acquisition cost and Hamels being a little overrated, I'd go elsewhere.
Yeah, just enjoy the next 15 years of Yoan Makata. See what's up. Alright.
Cool. Next question comes from Bob, who is asking for help with his playoff rotation. He's got six pitchers he's deciding between, and I'm going to list them as Bob does in ERA order as of 5 days ago. So Bob has Rich Hill, Mike Montgomery, Michael Fulmer, Carlos Carrasco, Corey Kluber, and J.A. Happ, which is a pretty good rotation, if you ask me. So who would you guys put in your playoff rotation with those six starters?
So, Jared, first, I think you meant to say J-Hap.
No, I did not mean to say that.
Because when your initials are J-A, why would you pronounce the A? I'll toss it around, but I'll go first for this. I think part of the interesting thing about playoff rotations, for me at least, is, saying you already had with what you can. And so I like to have a little bit of skill. So, Kluber is rising. I think he'd be my first starter for sure. Happ would be number two. Just because innings that I feel like those innings plus a strong September, which I think any pitcher on this list is equally likely to give, would be great. Fulmer 3, and I would put Rich Hill in there. And Esco as probably your top arm in the pen, and then Mike Montgomery as an evil lefty. Alright, anyone else?
Well, the first thing I would note is just classifying your pitchers. There's two sets of starting pitchers, and one is just pitcher number 4 who gets one start, and the others are 1 through 3. There's no reason to say, okay, my best pitcher needs to go in slot 1. You really just need to pick who those three are. And then you can decide how you want to run them based on how you think other people will go. If you've got, Clayton Kershaw, you probably want him going up against their number one pitcher. And so whatever you think your main competition's number one pitcher is, you want Kershaw to do that because he's going to win. If you've got something else, you may have a different situation. I do think Kluber, clearly, he's got to be in that top 3 group. And then I'd probably go with, then it gets fuzzy because we don't know whether they're lefty vulnerable or not. I'd be tempted to put Rich Hill in that top 3. He might not get enough starts to do that, but I think I would go Kluber, Hill, and then it gets fuzzier. Maybe Hap and then I don't know what they're going to do with Montgomery, and then it becomes difficult. I'm concerned about Fulmer's weakening, so I probably wouldn't have Fulmer in there. But I might be wrong.
So that's interesting. So I think I'd go... I think we got three opinions, so that's kind of cool. So so I agree. Kluber's definitely in the top three, and I agree with John's approach in terms of how you do it. I think you can throw Montgomery right out. If you're going to do that, it's kind of more of a desperation play in my mind, and you also have to have a very deep bullpen because he only may get, you know, a couple innings and a start, and I looked at Bob's team, and I don't think he has that bullpen. So I think you throw Montgomery out, you put him in the pen, so now you're left with four guys for three spots. I think Rich Hill, you know, his most recent start got scratched again, but I still think you have to have him just because the ERA is so shiny and the talent's still there if he's healthy, so I think he's in the top three. And then I'd probably put Carrasco as the third that gets two starts. Just I think true talent's probably the best of the remaining three, and his ERA is not that much worse than Fulmer. Hap I would take out. I think he's the worst pitcher of the five. And then, you know, Fulmer's been weakening, so you only give him one start instead of two. But I'd still take him over Hap.
All right. We haven't helped you at all.
Well, I mean, yeah, like you're trying to guess what's going to happen in like three starts in September. It's a crapshoot. I think it's fair.
Yeah. I do think John hit on one thing that's probably worth a quick tangent to in terms of setting your rotation. You know, you don't have to put your best starter number one, and I think the most important thing to do is look for that starter you really don't want to face, and then you can kind of play with your rotation. You kind of get into some game theory kind of stuff here.
Yeah.
But if someone has Clayton Kershaw and let's assume he's healthy, and he's their number one starter, you probably don't want to put your best pitcher number one. You probably almost want to concede the Kershaw starts and just try to win for the other five games you have to play. I know that seems a little counterintuitive, but with the way that score sheet works and when there's a pitcher that's so far above everyone else,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the best strategy.
Or maybe that's where you stick Rich Hill.
Or you can throw some of the tie variants and Rich Hill would be perfect for that. Yep.
All right.
I like it. Our last question comes from Matt, who says he's a loyal podcast listener and he's never won a score sheet championship.
Sounds right.
Sometimes correlation does mean causation. So he's got a specific question and a general one. His specific question is how worried should he be about Wainwright as his fourth starter in the playoffs. Ahead of him, he's got Scherzer, Pomeranz, and Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw's healthy. And then more generally, he loves our advice about lowest possible hooks without hitting AAA pitcher, but he wants to know if there's any other points he should be tweaking his lineup for the playoffs.
Yeah. I'll take the specific question first, and everyone can jump in on that. Yeah, I'd be worried about Adam Wainwright. I think that's legitimate. He's been terrible for like a year and a half and injured for the year before that. You know, sometimes there's not much you can do about it, though. Like, if people aren't going to trade you the starter you need, then just he's your number four starter, and hopefully you hit well that game. Sorry. Anyone else have anything? Or just, yeah, prayers.
I would note a couple of things. On his line, it does look like he's got a lot of relievers. I think the low hooks are generally good for your starters. Like, I usually put my starters at 3-0 hooks, and for closer, 1-0, because I have a long, deep bullpen. But you have to look at how many innings are you going to get from your relievers, and what is your relievers' expected ERA going to be. So if you're going to go to your seventh, and you're usually not going to go past seven relievers in the playoffs, but if you're thinking about, do I want my starter innings or my seventh reliever innings, just take a look at what the relative ERAs are, whether you want to put a guy all the way down to three or whether he's a 3.5. In general, it's, I think, almost necessary. I mean, it's not 100% necessary, but it's a huge advantage to have a crushing closer, a Britton, a Miller. And so in I do like to set very low hooks for my hook for closer for the playoffs. If a guy has survived six innings and allowed one run, get him out of there. All is well, and the luck balancing can come get you either in the next game or never if it's his second starter or if it's the fourth starter.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So I think you talked about, well, you helped me already see playoff rotations in a new way. So I think that's great advice. Do you have any other advice for lineups, or in particular, I guess, on the offensive side, if there's anything you like to do during the playoffs?
Well, for me, for the playoff lineups, I look at things very hard. I look at the platoon splits. I make sure that I'm optimizing the guys. I look at the projections. I do the math. What's the 40% of whatever? If you've got Sandy Leon, what do we expect that playoff number to be? And is it worth playing him over Evan Gattis or whoever? And so basically it's just doing each thing to make sure that you're optimizing your lineup based on what you expect to happen. The offense is a little simpler generally, but you do want to make sure you might have some surprising platoon advantages, and you might want to put some people on the bench in the playoffs so you might not otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think when I'm doing the hitting portion of the lineup card, I kind of start over like it's April and the season starting, and you know I have a fresh team. So you know I'm looking at pretty much everything, right? Like who should be a defensive replacement based on their range and their error numbers. You know, should anyone on my team be stealing bases based on their ratios? And then like John, I do the math. I have an Excel file where I bring everything in and then look up the players and you know do the math to see them versus righties and lefties, and then do a defensive adjustment. For again, both range and errors, and determine who you want to start. I think the hardest part is the playing time issue. If you have some batters with great bank stats, but you know they're not going to play enough, you kind of have to figure that out. And you know, would you rather just have this guy platooned against lefties if he's right-handed, or do you actually want to start him against righties as well? Well, then he'll run out of bats sooner. So things like that you have to take into account as well, and that gets a bit tricky.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have a question coming up from ourselves about how to handle some of the like, small playing time players, and Nick will get into depth in that in a second. There is one thing I wanted to point out on his bullpen that I don't know if you noticed this. I've seen other people do this too, where they have like massive bullpen hook or massive bullpen differentials between the right versus righties and versus lefties. But the hook isn't set to, let's say, 0.25. Does that make sense to you? How do you feel about lefty and righty specialists in score sheet coming out of the bullpen?
Yeah, I've seen people advocate both, right? So this is sort of an extreme where your reliever versus righties is your second guy out of the pen. And then against lefties, he's ninth, right? Which is just an extreme difference. And there's other people that just say, just totally ignore it and put in your best relievers. And I think it's somewhere in the middle. I don't think you want to have a lefty come in just because he's a lefty. You want to take into account, you know, what a platoon adjustment would do, right? So you take an average platoon adjustment, take that player's ERA, and if the benefit isn't going to make him better than the righty, then don't put him in just because he's a lefty, right? So
mm-hmm.
I do it a little bit because of that, because usually the adjustment isn't too huge. So, you know, if someone's within half a run of ERA, yes, I'll probably put in the same-handed pitcher. If they're not, no, I'm still just putting out the better reliever.
Yeah, I wouldn't be delighted to see Tony Cingrani come into a playoff game. To be perfectly honest, I do sometimes like the idea of if you have a lot of spare lefties to have some of them and just set the hook at 0.25, just to make substitutions happen, because that tends to mess with other people's lineups. But I don't think I love this idea of like having righty and lefty bullpens personally.
It's a little different, too, in the regular season than it is in the playoffs. In the regular season, what you're really hoping for is that your reliever allows zero runs. So when your reliever allows zero runs, you want that guy in all the time, and it doesn't matter what they hit against your – almost doesn't matter. In the playoffs, obviously, everybody's going to be susceptible to some runs. So there's going to be some differentiation that maybe I like Nate, use a little bit of differentiation in the regular season, and I use maybe slightly more in the playoffs, but it's still not a lot. I definitely don't go to these extremes, and I think it's actually a mistake.
Okay. Any other thoughts here?
I'm really glad Nate and John are here.
This is great. I'm learning a lot. So we had some topics that we wanted to go through, hopefully in fairly expedient order, before we get to our mock draft. I think one of them we touched on, so it's kind of related to the last point. Before we do that, Jared, do you want to close up the mailbag for the season?
No, because we'll answer questions.
Okay.
All right. Everybody's always open.
Thanks to everyone for submitting questions.
There rain and snow and...
You should know how that goes.
I really should.
Jared, for those who missed it, is actually a male carrier by birthright, right?
Third generation.
Well, I did intern for the Postal Service for a couple summers, so I think that makes me a third generation Postal Service employee, yeah.
Yeah. So, we don't give out captaincies just for nothing.
Well, he was first mailbag sergeant, right? And then mailbag lieutenant, and now he's mailbag captain.
Yeah, well, I mean, the mailbag wars of 2008. We lost a lot of good mailbag. That day was brutal. We were talking for a bit about the idea of platooning and like whether to have Sandy Leon in. And I feel like Sandy Leon is like the perfect example of for those who haven't been following the Red Sox as closely as you know, Peter Gammons, let's say. Sandy Leon is a backup catcher for Eternity who hit out of his mind for 2 months and will never do so again. Sorry, Red Sox fans.
Don't apologize to Red Sox fans.
We don't need your sympathy.
It's fair. Right, but he has 120 at-bats that are insane. Or, you know, Gary Sanchez, he's at Mike Zunino, so like, maybe even players who aren't catchers. What do you do in those situations? Like, I guess first, if the player has no underlying talent for this, and second, if there's some, how do you balance that in your, you know, in your head or using math?
The second way.
It's fair.
It's really just a math problem. So what I'll do is, if I had Sandy Leon, I'd say, okay, he's got 194 plate appearances. He's got an OPS of 981. I think that's good. And then, like, Steamer predicts him for 674 for the rest of the season, and I think that's probably not too far away. It might be slightly conservative, but not a lot. So we take the number of plate appearances, yes, we multiply that by 3.33, we then add that to the 194, and then we figure it out. There are a couple of ways to do that, but basically what you end up with Sandy Leon is, well, he's going to drop a lot, but he's probably still, depending on how good you are, he's probably still a guy you want to play in the playoffs, even though you're almost never going to keep him, barring some sort of miracle. This is a guy who's going to outperform most of the other catchers in the league.
And does that, so I guess that gets you to the performance part of the equation. What about playing time? So let's take it out of the realm of catcher, because catcher is actually pretty easy, right? You put your catcher in until he dies, and then you put your backup catcher in. You know, what about, let's say, at a more complicated, like your infield positions? Would you start a backup infielder in the playoffs?
If I thought he was good enough.
Okay, that's fair.
I think it's only a matter of the platoon, right? So if it's a lefty, yeah, you just start him and you get as many at-bats against right-handers as you can, right? If it's a righty hitter, you really want him to hit against lefties, right? So you kind of have to figure out, is he going to have enough starts, because you don't want him to hit against righties, right? Mm-hmm. And John may know this better than I, but you know, I think I don't think that in the playoffs they save the righty for the lefties only. I think it just goes in order of the game. I could be wrong on that, but you definitely want your righties, you know, hitting against the left-hander. You got to consider that.
Mm-hmm. So, but you'd be saying, so get Daniel Descalso in there, unless your shortstop is one of the is Corey Seager.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even if he's not playing, he's playing quite a bit, but even if he wasn't, yeah, just start him against righties.
Okay. Do you have a favorite fluke catcher in the AL?
Mine is certainly Sandy Leon. So, I mean, to go deeper, I mean, I traded for him in NorCal a week or two ago, and I, you know, to the extent that I make the playoffs, which is extremely unlikely now given the last week and a half, but I was going to, he was going to be my DH. I mean, he wasn't just going to be the catcher. I had a decent catcher platoon with Steven Vogt and Giovanni Soto, and I had a big hole at DH, and Leon was just, he was just going to DH full time and get as many at-bats as he could, so, you know, I'm fully committed to the small sample size guy if the bank stats are good enough.
Awesome. So, all right. So I think we covered that. We were talking about playoff strategies. So another playoff strategy or issue, let's say, late-breaking injuries, so players who are out for a few weeks who may be coming back. We have some questions here, but how would you handle, let's say, Giancarlo Stanton, who is going to be out for all but the last day of the season, theoretically, or if Marcell Ozuna is out now. Oh, sorry, Marlins. I guess your Ponzi scheme isn't going to work this year again. Oh, well. Or you have Andrew Benintendi here, who I think is out for all but the last week of the season, something like that. How would you handle players who are missing time in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, if you think they're going to play, you know, and you think they're better than your options, you want to get the PT. I mean, in issues like that, you've got to, you know, are they going to be, you know, coming at full strength and, you know, playing to the best of their abilities, coming right off the DL, and, you know, the answer may be not, and you adjust their projection down, and then you don't play them. But if you think they're going to be as good as they are and that's valuable, then, you know, I think it's kind of the same theory. You put them in, you get as many at-bats as you can. You know, you set your pinch hitter rankings and all that kind of stuff and your bench order, you know, assuming that that person's not going to play full-time, right? So you got to figure out who's going to play next. So you have the contingency plan. But as long as you do that, yeah, you know, take the at-bats if you believe in them.
Yeah, and I guess if you're setting a playoff or a playoff roster, it's very unlikely that you'll have so many good players that you won't have room to list Giancarlo Stanton, I would assume.
Yeah, that seems remote. I don't know what Stanton's. I mean, it sounds like they're going to get him. He's 30-35% to play for a week, so that gets you maybe two or three starts out of him. I do think you would pretty clearly platoon Stanton because I don't see him coming back for more than the last week, and so it makes sense to just go ahead and play him against lefties. Because otherwise they'll just use up his all of his starts will just get used up at random, and I don't think you want that. Plus, you know, he's at 244, 329, 496. If he were at last year's stats, then you just say, well, I want the maximum number of Giancarlo Stanton games. Here you probably want to maximize your goodness out of your Giancarlo Stanton games.
Very fair. Or game.
Yeah.
Hope he hits that one, that 500-foot home score sheet home run. It's always a dream. So I think we want to shift gears a little bit and have a little fun before we start the this year's mock draft. Do you want to go nuts and give a prospect who you are crazy about for 2017, which is an actual year that will actually happen?
Don't jinx it.
So, we'll get through January at least before, you know, Sweet Meteor of Death 2016.
Do you have a favorite prospect who you've been hoovering up stealthily in all the leagues, probably leagues that you are in with us so that we can't take them from you?
So my favorite guys probably right now, I sent something on Rowdy Tellez, and then Rowdy Tellez ended up in a Fangraphs story today and then immediately hit a homer, which was fun. He's an enormous human who hits home runs. You look at other guys you can adjust to, and this is crazy. I got him his number, and we call him Mabry, and that would be Mabry Valoria, who Ian called the Babbitt King of the Pioneer League,
yes.
And which is a little bit true, but he's hit a bunch of doubles and homers. He's a 19-year-old catcher in the Royal system, and he's a guy who I think you want to go after guys like this. Guys named Mabry usually do better than guys named Steve, and they, just relative to where they're drafted. So probably just as far as my deep reach, it'd be Mabry.
Wow, there you go. That's a nice pull. Nate, do you have any?
Yeah,
any prospects who you're super on.
I don't think they're certainly higher in the minors and probably maybe have a little more name recognition, but. So I'll throw out two. So Luke Weaver's a guy that I'm just all about right now. He just got called up, so he's made a few starts. But he came back and from injury kind of mid-season, and his velocity was back and even a bit above where it was when he was drafted. And he's a Cardinal, so you know there's some magic fairy dust going to come down at some point and help him, and he'll be awesome. So he's got that going for him. But his numbers have just been ridiculous. The command's there, the pitchability's there. Velocity's good, it's not great. Breaking ball's there. So I like him a lot, and I think he's relatively cheap in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, we saw him on our Texas trip, and
yeah.
Oh my God. Him against double A hitters was not super fair.
No. I think he's going to be something. The fly balls are a bit worrisome. But otherwise, I think he's a really underrated pitching prospect. And then the other one, who I'm probably going to pronounce wrong, but it's Eason Diaz, the Brewers infielder. He started the year terribly, like just terribly. I think his OPS started with a 4, like at the end of April. But he's been incredible since. He's got a ton of power for a smaller guy and a guy that can probably stick in the second base. So I like him a lot. I think, folks are kind of down on him because he's been striking out a lot, and he had that slow start, but he's there, he's turned the corner, he's playing really well, and a guy I've gotten pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of players who we have in multiple leagues. It's too late for you now, but we took Zach Collins in every league, and I don't regret that at all. That guy's going to catch, and he's going to be really, really good really, really soon in that kind of Benintendian way. Or maybe Kyle Schwarber is a good example. But Schwarber with maybe a little more power. But Collins can actually play a little more defense, which is not really a not really a great statement on his behalf. But, might be able to stand behind the plate. And the organization loves him.
Have we lost Ben?
Oh, that would be very bad because he is the one recording. Ben, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. That's great.
I heard you talking about the catcher guy that's like Schwarber.
That's awesome. Okay. Just want to make sure we're still recording. How's Destiny?
I'm not actually playing Destiny. I've been trying to get my laptop to not choke on the Hangouts app.
All right. Sorry about that. Another player who, in the White Sox system, which is me completely jinxing myself, but Alec Hansen looks to be all the way back, and I've been steadily snapping him up in every league I can. He would have gone 1-1 had he not completely fallen apart this year. And, you know, he was in a league that was, you know, way below his level. But even though I don't love pitching prospects, I would take him, especially in a hard league. And then he's either good next year or he's not. And, you know, if he's not, no big whoop. Trying to think if there are any deep sleepers. Maybe they'll just come to me throughout the evening, and we'll just start shouting out names.
So I got one more. Can I throw? I got a deep cut.
Yeah, go for it.
So this is only for BLs that don't have that whole you have to be affiliated with a Major League Baseball team requirement. But
oh, yeah.
If you can draft anyone on the planet, you want to go take Tetsuro Yamada, who's playing in Japan. He's probably going to be a ways away, but he's a good defensive second baseman that's probably the best hitter in Japan, and I don't think it's outrageous to say that he's probably like one of the 30 or 40 best position players on the planet right now. He hits for power, he hits for average, he draws walks, he doesn't strike out. He's 23, and he's doing all of that, and he's pretty incredible. So I know he's taken in a few of those leagues that allow that type of activity, but I don't think he's taken in all of them. So if you're in one of those leagues, you definitely want to try to snap him up.
That's a really good point. I do have a name that came to mind for the NL. I think Yadier Alvarez has been taken in a lot of leagues. I don't think he's been taken in every league. He is making the Midwest League look silly right now, and he is going to be ranked a lot more highly in the Dodger system by the end of the year. And again, it's, you know, pitchers could be anything, but the advantage is you'll know pretty soon, next year, whether you have something or not, and I think you could have something very special there. All right. We'll probably just keep shouting out names throughout the next 30 minutes. So do we want to revisit some drafts and talk about the past before we get to the future? Set the stage for the mock draft. The mock draft, if in case you missed it earlier this season, it's an exercise that is done every offseason by the great, coordinated by the great past guest, Brian Dewberry Jones. And it's a tremendous offseason exercise that really helps you focus and set your lineups, particularly if you're participating, but even if not, there's some great content for you. We all participated in it last year. I think we all did pretty well, actually. So this is going to be a real fun conversation. We had a podcast at the beginning of the season, which hopefully doesn't make us sound completely idiotic. But I thought we'd go around and just talk about how we did this year and what our favorite pick was, maybe, and kind of if you... maybe the pick most where your thinking was most correct. So process rather than product. John, let's start with you, right?
Sure. So I ended up with Scherzer and Lester in rounds 2 and 4. I got Giancarlo Stanton in round 1, and that turned out kind of badly, and maybe predictably with the injuries. But probably I got Daniel Murphy in round 12, and I guess I'll go with that as my happiest pick as far as the process. Basically, that was just factoring in the playoff numbers matter, and if you factor those in, you can come up with you can do okay. Now, I didn't deserve what happened. that's not realistic, but I felt good about the pick. I think my whole theme was tedious value picks, generally J.D. Martinez, Adrian Beltre, guys who were, and then when I went off of that and took people like Eddie Rodriguez or Dalton Pompey or Ketel Marte, it went really badly. So in this case, a really sort of boring, the really boring value picks did well for me.
All right, and Nate, how do you feel?
I think it was pretty good. You know, starting with Jose Fernandez and AJ Pollock was good and bad. You know, AJ Pollock is a guy I believe in a lot, but you got to play, and he struggled to do that. So I probably didn't take that into account enough, and I tend to look past the guys that miss, you know, 30 games a year and just focus on the good, and I probably shouldn't do that. Jose Fernandez, though, is pretty great. I think, you know, after Clayton Kershaw, he's probably going to be the second pitcher off the board next year, if not third.
We'll probably find out in a few minutes.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty good. You know, the two happy picks for me are very clear. Andrew Benintendi in round six, which is just tremendous. As a Red Sox fan, that just makes my day. He looked incredible in college. He looked incredible in his short debut last year. You know, the knock was he was a late bloomer, but he was also young. The knock was that he was small, but the bat was just incredible. So I think it was just kind of, you know, focusing on the good of a player and not getting wrapped up too much in what you could nitpick, and that's looking pretty good. The other is Jake Lamb in the ninth, who I think was just a, you know, he's a young guy that has a bat. He got promoted slowly, but he always hit. And with those guys, you just never know. Like, are they too old to the league, and that's why they're doing well? Or did they just get promoted on a slow schedule, and they can actually, you know, really play? Lamb was incredible. He got hurt. He's tailed off a bit lately. His defense probably isn't great. But for the ninth round, I think that's pretty exciting. I tried to follow John's model of also having some tedious value picks. That just didn't work for me at all. So Kendrys Morales and Jaime Garcia and Enrique Hernandez and guys, I was like, oh, he's got Josh Reddick, you know, guys I thought would just be solid little values, and they just didn't. So that was disappointing, kind of in the later stages of the draft. But those couple guys, I think, will carry the team going.
Well, Kendrys Morales is tedious, at least.
That's for sure.
All right, and our team. Oh God, I love this. Is the best mock draft we've ever had in their half decade. This is, with one maybe one exception that
there might be one. Moment. Yeah.
one pick didn't turn out so well. Before we get to though, so I think we've kind of. This is our second year doing something. Last year actually turned out very poorly using this approach, but we've been trying to take a lot of young veterans and I would say high minors players and really kind of focusing on that value. I think every year there's kind of this fight in the mock draft forum over whether rookies are going too high and people saying this is the year that they're going too high, and then you look at the end of the year, they're always the most valuable players being drafted. And, you know, this year we were bang on a few, and I think rightfully proud. So, you know, Manny Machado, first of all, like getting, I think, a player who's going to go higher than number six in our draft in a few minutes with the number six pick kind of fell to us, but, you know, having value come back.
I was going to say, it's worth caveating this, that there was, like, at least one or two pretty strange things that happened in the top five picks of this year's mock, so...
Yeah, the David Price pick not looking great at the moment.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure that the first five picks were considered representative even at the time. There was talk of starting the draft over, so...
Yeah, that's fair. But I still...
I'm not taking away the merits of the Machado pick, I'm just saying... Yeah. So going to go higher isn't necessarily meaningful at this point.
You know, part of it, I think we really believed in Kyle Hendricks, and he's definitely playing to the top of his ability. I did not believe this much, but this is the kind of player I expected to see, so I feel really happy about that. Trey Turner, we got some brick bats here. The guy's hitting 360. I don't need to look at that strikeout-to-walk ratio. I don't care. Is that a 420 BABIP? I don't care. He's fast. He can probably keep that up. you know, and the Trey Turner was interesting because we took Trey Turner, Ozzie Albies, who were Penn players at the end of the shortstop value spectrum. And I think there were some questions, not from here, but elsewhere in the draft, you know, are you doing okay if you're not getting the elite shortstops? And I think the answer is yes. Like, young shortstops always, or not always, but often have returned great value. We drafted both Wilson Contreras and Gary Sanchez. Yeah, that worked out well for us. I remember those picks because feeling like once we took Wilson Contreras in the 10th round, we were deciding between the two. And we ended up going back to Gary Sanchez just because he had fallen off the board so much. In retrospect, I would have been happy to take him in the 11th round instead of Bianco Park, who was terrible. but, you know, like, we got the question, like, what if he's blocked? Okay, so now we have Wilson Contreras and Gary Sanchez, and one of them is blocked. All right. Well, I hope we can find a way to trade one of them in the offseason.
There's no way to do that. No one will give you anything for Wilson Contreras or Gary Sanchez.
Yeah. And I still love Josh Hader, and I still think he's going to go higher in the 16th round next year. All that said, so we had one pick that didn't work out super great for us. He's currently enjoying the fruits of Oklahoma City right now. Yasiel Puig is, you may find him on Snapchat and Instagram and not on a major league diamond. I'm going to be honest, I think we're going to draft him again next year.
But, I mean, that was sort of the risk we knew we were taking, right?
Yeah. We also, yeah, this was also us partially doubling down on having taken him like 18th overall or something the year before. It was like, yeah, we still believe. And now his stock's going to dip and we're like, yeah, we really still believe. Oh my gosh.
But you guys had a ridiculous draft. I mean, that was a terrific draft. To get all those guys, I mean, really impact players. You know, obviously Sanchez isn't going to hit 400 with 1,000 home runs, but this has hugely moved the needle. He looks great. And Kyle Hendricks, that's awesome. Machado, awesome. Joey Votto, he's not nothing. This was a really good, really, really strong draft.
Oh, and Jared, I'm going to sell you out here because I wanted to draft Rich Hill in the 14th round, and you. This was like the one decision that you actively made was not to draft Rich Hill.
He's an old, injured pitcher. How good could he possibly be?
It's totally my MO.
All right. But, yeah, so we're pretty happy, but, you know, I think it's a good lesson. I think all of our teams draft pretty well, and I think it's part of that. Like, look for value, don't get attached to players, and look for players who are developing, or maybe post-development and are falling. Right? Just don't jump for, like, don't try not to reach for value. Let it come to you. And with that, we'll try to disprove that, I think, in our first... is this a mock draft? How are we going to classify this?
Well, how about we call it, like, a preemptive mock draft?
Yeah.
Right. Of course, as has been observed, the other drafts we do are not actually real.
Yeah, this is like third order, isn't it? Like, this is just going crazy.
Pretty meta.
So join us on this trip down the rabbit hole, and hopefully this gets you excited for 2017 before we book it out of here for a little while. I guess just to set the stage, everybody's available. This is a hard 13 continuing league for eternity. The universe is available, so if you want to draft, a presidential candidate, you are welcome to do it as long as they put up at least 5 WAR in the next. Well, they'll probably put up 5 WARs next year, depending on the candidate.
Oh dear.
Solid political humor. Anyway, so anyone's available. We're just going to go down the list. Who has the draft order?
I do.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
I know my audio is a little bit shaky. Yeah, so Nate has the first pick, I have the second pick, John has the third pick, Jared has the fourth pick, and Ian has the fifth pick. So we're going to draft, I think, five picks each, which is about 25 players deep. This is basically all the way through the largest possible first round for a BL. Most BLs are, I think, 20 to 24 teams. So we could stop at 20, but we're addicted to drafting, so we're going to draft 25.
And we're saying, just to clarify, we're saying that these are each individual teams, right? Like, we're not one team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the idea is, if there were actually 25 different owners, who would they choose with their first round selection? Since there are only five of us, we're going to obviously represent multiple parties in the draft. But yes, it's not meant to be a five-team, five-round draft. It is a 25-team, one-round draft done by five people. Because, you know, we don't have any other friends.
Well, I think that makes sense. why don't we get started, and hopefully between us we'll hit everybody.
So Nate's going to take David Price, right?
That's right. That's right. Should I start?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so first pick's still easy. It's still Mike Trout. It's still, I don't think, particularly close. It's a lot closer probably than it's ever been in terms of talent drop-off, but he's still young. He's still awesome. He's still playing center field. Just take Mike Trout and say thank you.
Does anyone not take Mike Trout here? Crickets.
Yeah,
Trout, clearly Trout.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, I have the second pick. I think this one is pretty interesting, actually. I have four or five different names that I came down to. I'm going to go with Chris Bryant, though.
Mm.
Yeah. That was also my second pick. I think it's close, but I do think he's the number two guy. I'm going to take, since Jared's next, it's kind of required that I take Manny Machado, because otherwise Jared will be happy, and I think that defeats the entire purpose of the podcast.
Completely fair.
You could also force Jared to choose whether he's going to jinx Manny Machado or
yeah,
not.
Actually,
that is,
yeah,
that is a strategy that we employ fairly frequently. John, there is no way you could have done this wrong, really.
Which is fair. I guess you didn't know there was home field advantage here.
So, Jared, you have the fourth overall.
Huh. I'm going to go Corey Seager.
Ooh. Yeah.
So I actually traded Chris Bryant straight up for Corey Seager in a league this year.
Oh, wow. So
that's pretty interesting that they went 2-4. I had Lamb at third, and he had Addison Russell at short, so we were both doubled up and sort of just made sense to do it. And then, you know, you don't think superstars that young ever get traded, but
yeah,
kind of made sense. And now they went 2-4, so that's pretty interesting.
It's about where they should be.
Yeah, it's been
I was considering too.
Hard to regret. Okay, so I pick five, and a couple players I like still on the board, turns out.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take the youngest of them all. I'll take Carlos Correa.
You love Carlos Correa.
I had already written down that Ian was taking Carlos Correa after Jared took Corey Seager, because I knew that Ian was...
I would say there's another player who made that a lot closer.
Yeah.
So, Nate, you are drafting for team number six.
So, I think I'm going to take that player, but or I hope I am. So, I think it's Bryce Harper. I think he goes here.
Yeah, sure.
You give him a pass for the down year. You chalk it up to injury or a down year or whatever, but the upside we already know because we've seen it, and you just take him here.
Yeah, I think we all agree Harper has to go there. So I'm drafting now for team seven. I'm going to take Mookie Betts. I don't love taking Mookie Betts, but I feel like on value it's easy to justify. He had strong projections coming in, and he's mostly beaten them, and he's 23, so sure, I'll take one of those.
How can you not I'd be pretty happy taking bets. I think there's actually a little gap after bets.
Okay.
And he's a guy I thought was... I think after bets, you start to have people with, you know, flaws of one kind or another. And so then you have to sit here and type things into your computer and figure out who to draft next. It's
stalling for time, John Means.
But I'm gonna take even though it's I hate to make park plays, I'm gonna take Arenado.
Has anyone else noticed that Nolan Arenado is starting to get like Derek Jeter style conversations around him, where like people just have giant crushes on him wherever he goes? Maybe it's just because I watch a lot of Rockies Road games, but. Or I hate the Rockies announcers and I never watch them. But like everybody has like this massive crush on Nolan Arenado, which is like he's a very good player, but in real life, like cool your Jets people. That said, I would take him here too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Barrett, you're drafting for Team 9?
Yeah. It's a little higher than I want to take a pitcher, but especially when he's hurt, but like Clayton Kershaw is just like when he's good, he's so much better than everyone else. So I'm gonna take Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, the back injury is a concern, but Kershaw really is better than everyone else.
Yeah. For this exercise, I threw together a little toy value metric because I was hoping to get year-to-date sim values or something like that, and they weren't ready, and I didn't have enough time to cobble together anything sophisticated, but. No matter how I calibrated it between hitters and pitchers, when I came out with things that I thought looked reasonable, Kershaw was like 10% higher than everybody else based on the projections coming into the year. Now, obviously, like in year, he's been injured, but yeah, I think Kershaw's a good pick here.
All right.
I'm drafting for Team 10.
Yeah. So. This is a head versus heart pick, or a more accurately short versus height pick, but I think I'm going to have to go with, despite myself, go with Paul Goldschmidt here and just take the solid value. And then I would be a little riskier later, knowing that I have a giant bopper with the 10th pick.
I think Goldschmidt's good value. I was actually looking at his name before I took Betts earlier, because I didn't see as big of a drop-off between Betts and Goldschmidt, even though Goldschmidt's older. But it's worth noting that Goldschmidt went second overall in this year's mock. So. Or, like, last year's mock, I guess, whatever you want to say. The mock coming into this year. Nate, drafting for Team 11.
So I'm just going to keep taking Ian's leftovers because they actually are the top player on my list when it gets there, so I will take Altuve. I'll buy into some of the improvements, both offensively, defensively, and hope he keeps 70% of those improvements or so.
I think... So, sorry, I'm drafting for... I think it makes sense at this point to take Anthony Rizzo. I guess I'd be interested in anybody that disagrees. Based on the stuff that I pulled together and the things I was looking at, I feel pretty comfortable doing so. It's like a peaking prime corner bat, so it's not super sexy, but hopefully it's a good, stable base for the team 12.
I think it's I think he's an obvious first half of round one pick. He's great. He's not old. He's crushing it. That seems good.
I think of Anthony Rizzo as like an annuity. Like he's never going to put up like an 8-WAR season, but he's going to put up a whole bunch of like 6-WAR seasons. And there's just I don't think there's a lot of risk that he's going to break down or lose his power or his eye or anything like that. So you just take that and hold on to it forever.
Yeah. John, drafting for Team 13.
There are couple of much different guys to look at this point. And the question is whether you want to go young or go for just the current, like, crushing person. I'm just going to take the crusher. I'm going to take Josh Donaldson here.
Oh, that's my pick.
Yeah. Well, all right, so he wasn't getting to me.
Do you guys have concerns taking Donaldson when there are younger and potentially, I don't want to say mashier, but higher upside guys that are still playing every day and will probably still go in the first round?
There's no higher upside guy than Donaldson.
Yeah, I'd be very curious who the higher upside guy was.
That's not a real thing. It's just a question of Donaldson's going. His expiration date's going to hit earlier, but you're getting just massive star crushiness out of Donaldson for probably two more years.
I won't tell the guy that I was thinking until he goes. But
okay.
I think, yeah, I mean, maybe upside is a different way, Ben, but I get what you're saying. Like, he's going to be useful. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Okay. Well, he's going to go soon, so then we can talk about
it. I don't want to take Donaldson. I don't like anyone. I mean, I like it when he's left, but for a first-round guy, I'm going to go Freddie Freeman.
Team 14. Sorry.
Freddie Freeman.
All right.
That's not, like, sexy, but he's consistently hits a lot. I think.
He's like the poor man's Rizzo, I guess.
Yeah,
that really hosed me. I do think there's a gap right now, by the way, for what it's worth.
So, if you need timing, and I can bring up the guy that I was thinking of, and we can talk about him. You can also just pick, and we can wait to talk about him until he goes.
Yeah, I think it's okay to wait here, I would say. Maybe I'll take that player. I am interested in going a little off the steamer board here and taking Francisco Lindor.
Mm. Interesting.
That I feel, and this might depend a little bit, because this might be the part that's unresearched, but I feel like Francisco Lindor is going to have a pretty strong defensive projection. And he's going to play every day. And I feel like he's been... Once the recalculations come in, I think he can hit the heck of the ball.
I think he was the guy I was thinking of between him and Donaldson. So, for what that's worth.
Okay.
So I've got Nate drafting for Team 16.
That wasn't your guy, Ben, before I picked, was it?
No. There's two guys that I was thinking are reasonable alternatives to Donaldson that haven't gone yet.
Okay. So I agree. I actually thought after Donaldson was where the second drop happened, and it gets a lot harder now. I think there's like 15 players I could possibly consider. So I'm going to go... I'm going to go Xander Bogaerts and hope some more power comes because I don't think his value is quite there yet to justify the pick, but he's young and I still think there's projection there, so we'll do that.
So Bogaerts was one of the guys that I was thinking of. I think his positional value is better than Donaldson. He's obviously much younger than Donaldson. I guess it sort of depends on, like you were saying, Nate, whether you think the power is on the way or not. The guy that I probably would have taken if I were John, and I'm going to take now representing Team 17, is Giancarlo Stanton. And I know that he's had a bunch of missed playing time because of injuries, but I think, so like last year it was the... he got hit with the pitch, and I guess I don't know what happened to him this year. I know it's his leg, it's like his groin muscle or something, right? And I do believe that to a certain extent health is a skill, so I don't think he's necessarily on par with the guys that have gone ahead of him, but I would still argue that he has more upside than Donaldson, and I think it's not just because he's 4 years younger. I think his best season is always going to be better than Donaldson's best season at the plate. And I'm curious to hear why you guys might disagree.
I think it's just injury. I just think it's...
Okay.
This feels like early career Troy Tulowitzki, right? Like, the skills are amazing, but is he going to be healthy to help you in the playoffs? Like, gosh, that just feels like such a dice roll at this point.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think the way in which he was hurt also bothered me this year, as well as another player who has fallen a little farther off my list than I would have expected. That when he was healthy this year, he wasn't particularly good for much of it, and which probably means he wasn't healthy for it. But yeah, like it's the injuries are starting to become like nagging and persistent and cutting into his value even when he does play. Which I think that said, he's the first or early second round for me. Like there's only so far he could drop.
It seems like not. So maybe I guess maybe I just don't know enough about his injuries. It seemed to me like the injury that kept him out last year was not something that you would ever expect to recur because he got. Didn't he get hit in the face with a pitch? Am I making that up? Or is that a different injury from?
I forget if that was 2014 or 2015. I apologize.
In 2014, he played in 145 games.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, because he got hurt and then he came back with that like baller G helmet, which almost made getting hit in the face worth it if you could get a helmet that like, has your name on it.
Yeah. Did John, did you have any comments on Stan? I guess specifically because I was sort of addressing your Donaldson pick.
Stanton's awesome when he's healthy. I'm concerned about the health. And you do have, there is actually a rational claim of Stanton having a higher upside than Donaldson. A lot of these really young guys, because Donaldson's already hit it. I mean, we know what Donaldson's going to do. It's a very, very high standard. But Stanton's also done that. I'm just really concerned about Stanton's injuries. And and I'm concerned because he's getting chewed up every year now. And this gets, at the end of this, you say, Eric Chavez, that didn't work out for you.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I don't think it's without risk, but I think.
You like risk?
Yeah, and it wasn't so long ago that we were trying to decide if he was going to be better than Bryce Harper in the mock draft, too. So.
Very fair.
Yeah. All right, next up we've got John drafting for Team 18.
Got a lot of guys here on the list, and I'm just going to go ahead and why not take an elderly pitcher, because that's what you want to do with your first-round pick. I'm going to take Max Scherzer.
Uh-huh.
Does anybody have a different pitcher going second behind Kershaw?
I have them together, if the other one is who I think it is.
Okay.
So I think it's completely justifiable either way.
Yeah, so I probably have a group of four or five of them, and if it were like real-life drafting, I would just wait until two, maybe three of them had gone before I popped one of them.
I've got five as well in my list.
At the top of the group. What was that, Jared? Sorry.
I've got five as well right now.
I only had two, and neither was Scherzer. So I think
Jose Fernandez is calling, and he's really upset right now.
Yes,
that's my phone. Sorry about that. It's been answered. Sorry. Hang my head in shame.
It's okay. Just let us know what Jose has to say about you not taking him.
Yeah, he's mad.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
Jared drafting for. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Or are we not done with the pitchers?
No, go ahead.
So the next pick is Jared drafting for 19.
I mean, there is a clump of pitchers for me. I don't know if I would like you, Ben, I'd wait or not. The hitters are... I'm going to...
There's at least one hitter I know you like.
Yeah?
I don't know if you're going to take him, but...
I mean, well, Mark Trumbo should have gone already.
Not him.
I'm going to take... I'll just do Jose. I'll do Jose Fernandez. That was my next picture. I'll take him.
All right. I think totally justified. I had them back to back, so I have no preference. Scherzer is less scary, so I understand why John prefers that. Fernandez is more fun.
Then we have Ian drafting for Team 20.
I'm going to take Matt Carpenter. He's turned into a monster. I don't know why. Just happened.
Cardinal pixie dust.
Yeah, I think he's a first-round pick, and I'm really surprised to say that, having watched him 5 years ago in Springfield.
I don't think I could do it, but I understand why you did.
I did not have him on my top 25 list, so...
Yeah, I didn't either.
I didn't either.
Okay, I did, cool.
I did. I'll bail you out. I did.
Great news, everyone.
I miss mine. Nate drafting for Team 21. This will be the last pick for each of us as we round out the 21 through 25.
Yeah, so I'll take the other pitcher that I thought was with Fernandez in the two after Kershaw. Maybe a little risky, probably a little riskier, but I'll take Noah Syndergaard, yeah. And I will be happy with that. If he stays healthy, there's just a lot of years of productivity there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And he came out today as a strong anti-wave, with a strong anti-wave sentiment, which makes him my favorite pitcher in baseball at the moment.
That's interesting. Sorry, so I'm drafting for Team 22, and I'm having a hard time not being myself over and over again. I actually see two hitters that I think you could justify. I'm going to go with Andrew McCutchen. I know that he's had a down year. I guess it's possible, and so like, I guess this is probably obvious for anybody that listens to the podcast regularly, but I don't follow baseball often enough that it's possible that like Andrew McCutchen had some catastrophic thing happen, and taking him here is totally stupid. But okay. So assuming that it's just sort of a down year, I think there's enough potential still that he's going to get a decent center field rating, and he's still young enough, I think, that we could see him revert to the days that saw him posting 7 and 8 win seasons. Obviously, this year's not going great, but that's part of why he's available at pick 22 instead of going as a lock in the top 5, which is what happened with him for the last couple of years. So, I guess last year he went 12, so not as early last year, but years before that. Anyway, John drafting for Team 23.
I'll take Rugi. I can't resist. I had to do it by law. I might have gotten him his number when I drafted him in some supplemental a million years ago, and I understand the approach might not be optimal, but if you were as a 22-year-old, I mean, you look at him and okay, maybe some of the other guys that might get drafted in the next two picks are better risks, and he's not a good defensive second baseman, but he's got mad power for a 22-year-old, and there's a lot of ways this could go right. So I'm taking him.
Yeah, I feel like next year he will definitely have an on-base percentage over 300.
Before we go to Jared, I would really love to dissent on this pick because I don't like it, but I'm on the losing end of a Sean Coyle versus Odor bet, so I'm prohibited from commenting.
There's still time.
That's pretty great.
Never give up.
What could be worse? You could have put your money on Jerickson Profar. all right, so Jared's drafting for Team 24.
I don't love it, but I'm going to take Buster Posey.
Yeah, sure you are.
I think that's a good pick. I think Posey was the other guy I was thinking about. Older catchers kind of die, but you're going to get a lot of high impact from Posey over the first few years of this, and he's awesome.
Well, that's what I mean, like the short-term thing, and he'll be hopefully one of the best inning catchers next year, but then the year after that, is he? I don't know. Maybe.
It's really awesome to get sniped on the 24th pick. Delighted of a mock draft.
So, Ian, do you have other people that you feel like you can easily go to?
Yeah, I'm going to go off the board again.
Were you going to pick for Ian?
No, I was going to suggest somebody for Ian, but okay. I'll just bring him up after this, because I'm a little surprised he didn't go to any of us.
We'll bring up probably a bunch of players.
I'm
going to do the park pick and take Trevor Story. And just, you know, count on him to not be traded from the Rockies, who never trade anyone, ever. And just hit 40 home runs a year until he gets hurt, which will probably be in mid-August of each year.
Well, that was a spectacular season by Trevor Story, for sure. So,
yeah. So
I have a couple of guys I want to ask about, and then if there's other guys you want to ask about, of course, we can round table. The podcast will go a little long, but I don't think that's the end of the world. And it won't be notably longer than any other episode we've ever done. And there's way more smart people on it, so it's definitely worth the listener's time. So I want to ask about... First is Kyle Schwarber. Obviously missed all of this year so far. I've heard like some rumblings that he might be back for the playoffs or something. Bad knee injury, playing outfield somewhat awkwardly because he's not going to be a catcher, but he's still super young. I think we have plenty of evidence that he's going to mash in the majors. And it seemed to me like he would be the kind of guy that goes ahead of the likes of Matt Carpenter or maybe Buster Posey or Trevor Story. I expected him to show up somewhere near the end of the first round. I didn't want to take him ahead of Stanton or McCutcheon when I was drafting for those two teams, but I thought one of you guys would take him, and I'm a little surprised you didn't, so I'm just curious if you guys want to talk about whether you considered him or not, and... maybe quickly comment on about how much farther you think the draft would go before he gets taken.
I'll jump in. I definitely considered him. He's a second round value for me, though. I like him a lot. Like I've been banging on about. You may remember me from the Scoresheet Talk forums. I do think he can catch. I think Joe Maddon will make him catch 20 times next year. Because Kyle Schwarber catching 20 times is the equivalent of like the Cubs wearing onesies. It's like a fun thing that he does just to entertain the team. Yeah. But that said, even I would want to see it again, because if he is a 2.02 outfielder in 2018 or like a DH for an American League team, then you have given up a lot of value.
Sure.
I agree with you, and I think he's a second round. I think he's somewhere in the second round.
Okay. Nate, I know you're a fan of Schwarber, or at least you were the last time we talked about him. Do you have any specific thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been very high on his bat. You know, he could be one of the five best hitters in baseball, you know, a couple years from now, but he's got to get there, A, and B, I agree exactly that he could be a 2.02 outfielder in 2 years, and then it's like he's really got to hit. So
yeah.
I think second round's right. I had six people left on my list. He was one of them. Okay. So I think he's early second, but I think second's right.
Okay. So the other hitter I wanted to specifically ask about is Miguel Sano.
Sure.
Obviously,
just where you have the greatest hits of Scoresheet Talk. I like that.
Well, yeah, it's not meant to be that. But, you know, I guess, so notably, and I suppose I should mention that this is part of the reason I'm bringing him up, he went 14 last year. He's 23. I think we expect that 23-year-olds that hit the majors aren't going to be perfect. And I know that he hasn't had the year that anybody would have hoped, any of his fans, I guess, would have hoped to see him have. But I'm curious if any of you guys thought about taking him. I didn't expect him to go like I expected Schwarber to go. But I'm curious if he was on list at all, anybody thought about it.
I did not. I don't think he's a legit first-round guy. As a third baseman, he's managing to... He's got a fielding percentage of better than 7/8, which is good, but not over the 900 that you really, really want to reach out for.
He is over the Braun line.
And, you know, I love these guys with the big power, but... You've got the huge K rate. You've got the Twins factor. The Twins aren't good at things, and
the baseball things.
Yeah, baseball related activities is not their strong suit. That's not their core competency. So I think that what you want to see right now, he's a good right. He's headed to being a pretty good right-handed DH, and the power might be good enough where he's actually good right-handed DH. But I'm not sure I wouldn't rather have Edwin Encarnacion right now and just take the 4 years of very goodness rather than wait maybe eternally for Miguel Sano to get good enough to carry this the fielding.
Sure.
Yeah, I think hashtag twins is appropriate.
I've started downgrading every twin just on principle, especially young ones. Like Jose Berrios would be great, but he's not on a... He's just not going to be in a major league organization. sorry, friend of the podcast, Todd Melander.
I mean, Todd will probably get over it. Todd's aware, I think, at this point of what's going on. So there's one other question that I wanted to bring up because we were sort of beating around the bush about some of the pitchers in the next tier. And I'm going to quickly name the two that I'm pretty confident would have been in the next tier for me. I think I'm always hesitant to take pitchers early because the risk-reward doesn't seem worth it to me at this point unless you're getting Kershaw, basically. So the two that I had in the group with the others that went were Kluber and Sale. Are those two guys in the tier for you all also, and who else might be in the tier of pitchers that you're looking at next?
I think Bumgarner somewhere around there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, sorry. I missed Bumgarner because he was higher. But yes, I had Bumgarner.
Yeah. So I think Kluber's a machine. Seems about right.
I honestly didn't bother after. Syndergaard was the last pitcher who I considered, and I didn't consider Syndergaard very strongly, to be honest. And I would consider throwing Steven Strasburg in there.
He was also on the list.
Maybe ahead of Chris Sale, who Chris Sale has not looked right to me for a while. I don't know what that means, but...
I agree. What they've done with Sale to make him more of kind of a contact pitcher, I mean, maybe it's a good idea long term, but it really reduces his ability to have one of these 2.15 ERA seasons where you're just like, okay, that's destroy all humans, win playoff game 2 and 5 or 6.
Yeah, and then you pretty much have to consider Rich Hill here, too. So.
Of course. Nate, did you have other pitchers that you were considering in this vicinity?
Or who's the one player who you wanted to take in the first round?
No, I didn't have any pitchers left here. None of the next six names. I thought Bumgarner was going to be number four and should be, and there's probably a mini teardrop after him, but no one I would consider here. I think they're more mid or late second round guys.
Okay. So by the mock draft results last year, of course, there was Price, but then I think Greinke also went around in this tier, and that was probably just on the back of his we'll say like aberrant performance last year.
That was just a bad pick.
Sure, he definitely went early last year, but I'm saying, like, in terms of the tiers, you think he was even out of place? Because judging by projections, he's not notably behind the other pitchers that we're talking about. At least like the ones that I was looking at when I was preparing. The other guys that are here in the same tier in terms of the projections were Garrett Cole, Matt Harvey, who we all know about, Strasburg, who you guys mentioned, Jake Arrieta. It seems like those guys are all second round sort of guys. I don't think any of us would have considered them, right?
Yeah, I remember even last year, I think we had Granke behind a number of names, and then he went much earlier than we expected. So this year did not. This year's not one in his ledger, I think.
Right. Yeah. So I didn't mean to imply that we should have been taking Grinky here, just that I could see people asking if he were in this group or not, or if like we considered. And we didn't, because we don't like him.
So does anybody have a player who they wanted to take in the first round? Didn't have first-round value, but would love to have made a statement with.
I thought about Alex Bregman. I think he really is that good a prospect. This is one of the few situations where I do think that blocking is an issue because they have a shortstop, and so he's going to end up somewhere that isn't shortstop, I think. And they have a second baseman, so I think he's going to end up not there either. So you do have some issues as far as where he's going to end up positionally, but I think he's legitimately awesome prospect.
Interesting. That's higher than I have him.
He was one of the six names left on my list.
Who are the others, Nate?
So Schwarber we talked about, Miguel Cabrera, just for tedious...
Oh, he's good.
Tedious old guy value. Kyle Seager...
Tedious old guy values.
Yeah. Kyle Seager, who is just had an awesome year. I think he's always been this good. He's just had trouble completing it for the full season, so knock on wood, he's got 4 weeks left in him. And then the two that I... To answer the who did you really want to take to make a statement question, there was two guys... one of them was Yoan Moncada, who I would take over Bregman. I know the positions in theory don't align, but because Bregman's not going to be a middle infielder, I would take Moncada over him. Just everything's there, and he's still super young. So you take him. And then this one's probably off the board. I don't think anyone will agree with this, but I was seriously considering DJ LeMahieu, which is a park pick again. But, you know, I think if you look at it right now, he's probably one of the five most valuable players in baseball this year from a score sheet perspective, because he's got like a 930 OPS or so, and he is like a plus eight defender, and he doesn't commit errors. So when you add all that up, he's basically in Altuve range. He's only, I think, under contract for two more years, so that's a little scary. But he's relatively young, and the performance has been incredible.
And the Rockies will never trade him. DJ LeMahieu did not make my list, but that's a really... He probably should have.
It's interesting to see where he goes in the mark.
Not on my list. Would not have done. But very interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a statement, but I would really like to take Joey Votto for the same reason as as Miguel Cabrera. And he's fun, and he's has turned into just an evil henchman at this point, which I do appreciate. And I'd also like to throw a shout out to the rest of the Red Sox outfield. I think they're second rounders, but boy, Benintendi seems like a strong pick, and boy, Jackie Bradley Jr. with like a 2.2 something defense would feel like a really hot pick for me. And does make that one draft we did look retrospectively better. We kept him that year, by the way, just in case anyone asks. After hit 198, we were like, oh yeah, we'll keep him.
John, is there anybody left on your list that we haven't talked about?
I think we've pretty much covered it.
All right.
There's one other guy that I had on the tedious veteran value along with like Cabrera and Votto. That was Robinson.
We're not taking Barry Bonds, okay?
Robinson Cano, I think, is like kind of maybe sneaky better than you thought he was or something. I know he's a second baseman and he's getting older, so I'm not saying he should have gone, but it seems like he'll probably go right.
Yeah. He wasn't on my list, but I feel confident somebody's going to take him in the first round in the mock draft.
Yeah, for better or worse.
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad pick. It's just different value approach. All right, so I think we're coming to the end of our season. This was really excellent. Thank you all for sticking around a little past witching hour. This was really entertaining to us, which is, I hope is passed on to you, the listener. Not,
but at
sorry.
Least we got something out of it.
That's what's important.
Yeah. And if you like this, go to the Mock Draft Yahoo group, available somewhere on the internet, and sign up now, and don't forget, so that you can get all of this winter. And if you sign up now, you'll probably get the email that may invite you to join. And since we really hate complaining about terrible picks, we trust you guys to make better picks than some of the people who are in the league. So please join. And I'd definitely like to thank our guests, Nate Stevens and John Main. This was a delight. And thank you for coming on last minute.
Yeah, we were happy to be here.
Yeah, no, very cool. Always fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and definitely want to also, since we're ending the season, want to thank Ben and Jared for making my life better and every other Wednesday a little more exciting.
Well, thank you, Ian.
Yeah. Or every other Friday, sorry, when it's released. Right, everyone?
Right!
I feel like we're definitely past trying to pretend like there's no magic curtain at this point.
Okay. Yeah, we're very transparent.
Let's just out the wizard and let it be known.
And definitely want to thank you, listener. It consistently still, all this time later, surprises us that anyone is listening to this. I don't think anyone is listening to this part.
No, but I think people do. Plus, they write in and tell us that they listen.
Yeah, but it's always a delight, always a joy. I love hearing from you. And even if we don't hear from you, I'm glad you're listening and out there. It makes it a delight, and we hope to be back again in the winter, like we said. Until then, stay warm and enjoy baseball. On behalf of our guests, on behalf of Ben Murphy and Jared Weiss, I'm Ian Lefkowitz. Thanks again, and have a great day.
Three true outcomes, they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, Ian, Ben, and Jared. Scoresheet baseball can be tricky if you don't possess the edge. They'll call it the way they see it, you'll rarely hear them hedge. They each possess the knowledge, honed from years of play. You want to win at Scoresheet, you're going to want to stay with three true outcomes. They want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, the number one independent score sheet podcast in the US of A.